You're good.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to this professional branding, business coaching, and client development webinar series. This is the first of those. My name is Sheila Willis. If you don't know, I am president of the YLD for a mere 10 more days, maybe 13 more days. This webinar series and presentation is something that was really, really important to me. I really think it's important to learn about business development and sales. And often that is just not something that you get from resources in firms or other places. So I was very excited to invest in you all through hiring Walker McKay to come speak with us today. Walker McKay is the founder and principal of McKay Consulting Group, LLC. He is a lifelong salesperson, coach, and creator of the No BS Sales School, where he teaches people like you how to stop relying on the old way of selling. There's a reason why it's not working. After spending 35 years calling, networking, and getting referrals to better clients, and over 15 years helping others build world-class sales team in almost every industry, he has uncovered what it takes to consistently close business without you or your prospect ever feeling like you're selling. He shares his proven secrets to success to help you hit your targets, grow your revenue, and gain the respect you deserve. Walker is active on all social channels, especially Twitter and LinkedIn. I was fortunate to meet Walker when he gave a brief presentation when I was in Leadership Columbia, and I was enthralled and infatuated since then. Really excited to have you here and to hear you talk about sales in a way that's not going to make me feel gross, because I hate asking people for money in business, which apparently is a thing you have to do as a lawyer.
Only if you want to get paid, right?
Yeah, only if you want to get paid. So now I'm going to turn it over to Walker. Thank you for being here.
You're welcome. Thank you so much, Sheila, for introducing me. I do encourage you all to turn on your cameras if you can. It's more fun for me if I can see your face. And what I'll do is I'll call on people who I don't see their face. So that may give you some incentive to turn your freaking video screen on. This needs to be an interactive session. A lot of this stuff is not rocket science, right? This is a lot of stuff that you may say, well, hell, I knew that. But sometimes it's a reminder. Sometimes it is, maybe it's a new way of looking at things that you hadn't thought of or hadn't thought of in a long time. When I start, how about raise your hand if you got into law so that you could also be in sales. Please raise your hand. I don't see any hands up. How many of you are surprised now that you're practicing law that you got to go out and find new clients? Raise your hand. Okay, okay, you are, Kathleen. All right. If I say the word, I'm going to have to call on somebody now. Shay, if I say the word sales, what's the first thing that comes to mind? And you won't offend me, I promise. What's the first thing that comes to mind when I say the word sales or salesperson?
Aggravating.
Stephen Chenoweth, give me another one.
I think of like the used car dealership stereotype.
Yes, right on. How about you, Demetrius?
Sometimes I feel like I'm chasing after something elusive when I think about selling something.
Yeah, chase, right? I had a person, I interviewed a guy for a sales job a couple weeks ago, and I said, why do you want to be in sales? And he said, because I love the chase. And I said, you're in the wrong damn business. You should get in the ambulance business or something like that. Don't get in the damn sales business for the chase. You're doing it wrong if that's what you're doing. All right, let's see. I don't see any names down here. So, is that? God, as soon as your pictures come up. All right, James Floyd, what's your definition? Why do you think that people have this negative view of salespeople, James Floyd? Got to unmute yourself there. Hold your space bar down. It's probably your best way. There you go. You got to hold it down.
Sorry, I disconnected, so I had to switch microphones. I think there's some truth in what everyone's saying about at least how it feels for the people that are being sold to, of being chased or being pursued or being pressured. I think if you think about it that way, as people coming at you, that's kind of what you view it as doing.
Yep. Why do salespeople have a bad reputation?
Because of those exact things.
Because they deserve it. Right.
Yeah, right.
Somebody give me a definition of sales, of good selling. Elizabeth Crane, what's your definition of good selling? All right, let's see who else. See, they didn't give me the name anymore. Andrew Connor, what's a definition of good selling? And I'm going to use the words sales, business development, and marketing in y'all's situation as all the same. Usually when I say the word sales, it makes lawyers just cringe, right? But it's if you want to make feel better about yourself, you can call it marketing or business development. But what does sales mean, Andrew?
I say giving people the information to be able to acquire the services or products that they really need.
Okay, that's one definition. Who's got another definition? Kathleen, what's another definition of sales?
I think using a product to fill a current need of a client.
Okay.
And they might be getting that need met elsewhere, but if you can do it better for them, then you want to sell your product that way.
All right. Cameo, one more. What's sales mean?
Sorry, I did not mean to disappear.
You're good.
Just to be able to persuasively make someone want what you have.
Okay. All right, so I'm going to share my definition with you guys, and you tell me if this resonates with you. It's having somebody trust you enough to give you money to make a problem go away. Having somebody trust you enough to give you money to make a problem go away. Elizabeth, does that make sense at all? Elizabeth Crane, does that make sense at all in your legal world? You got to unmute yourself.
Sorry about that. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Trust part is especially important.
A lot of people see selling as convincing or as educating or as, or we believe we can talk people into things. And I don't believe, here's my personal belief, I don't believe we can sell anybody anything. I think people like to buy, right? And people buy from people that they trust. And so there are several different ways you can, there are a million ways or a bunch of ways you can build trust. Here's what I'll tell you. The vast majority of people that you meet with, I would say the vast majority of people you meet with, they already believe you have the skills to help them. That's table stakes. They assume that if they're in front of you or you're in front of them, that you've already got the skills to help them. You don't have to convince people that. Last time you went to the doctor, and how much time did he spend explaining to you all of his things up on the wall, his diplomas and plaques up on the wall so that you would know he was good enough to take care of you? Not so much, right? Didn't spend that much time doing that. If we take the doctor example a little bit further, Stephen, what is a doctor really good at, or should they be really good at if you're going for a visit or consultation? What is it that helps build trust between a doctor and the patient? Knowing that you probably assume he's good.
I would think knowing that he knows what he's talking about in terms of diagnosing the problem and then finding something reasonable to how to fix it, I guess, or cure it.
Sure. So Chris, is it Chris Fedeli? I don't know if you can hear. Let's see. I'm going to go. Who is the young lady with the blue V-neck with your pen up by your face like this right in the middle of the screen? Yes. What is your name?
Molly.
Molly, put your names back up there. I can't see. Okay, good. What is it that a doctor does really well to help people understand or to build trust?
For me personally, it's bedside manner. I think that's one thing we see with doctors, right? There's a lack of bedside manner. So for me personally, I like a doctor that's going to sit down and talk to me and listen to all the things I need to say. That to me
hit on you just hit on what I was trying to do, which is listen, right? And that begins with what a doctor will often do, and you got to do it before you even get in to see him, is ask questions, right? Ask questions to fully understand where you're coming from. If you want to build trust with somebody, the number one way you can do that is not things in common. It's not you went to Clemson, I went to Clemson. You like to play golf, I like to play golf. That's not necessarily it, right? It's how well they believe you understand them. And that's going to come from you asking questions to help figure out where they're coming from. And a lot of people are like, yeah, questions. We do that all the time. Part of it is, I mean, there is some data gathering that you need to do, and I've got a sheet. Everybody got the handout that I sent? Does everybody have the handout? You were supposed to have gotten handouts from me. Whoops, sorry. We'll make sure you get those.
Check on.
Huh?
I'm saying I'll check on that.
Okay, please do. There were two handouts you should have gotten from me, so sorry that you guys get to keep. But the way that you're going to build trust is for your prospect to see that you understand them and their situation, right? They assume, most of them assume that you're already pretty good at what you do. But how well you can connect with those people, not because of what you have in common, not because you drink beer together, but how well you understand their situation, be they corporate, be they individual, that's where the connection comes. And it's going to come from not so much you talking about you, but about your asking them questions, having them see that you're trying to understand them and their situation. This is true with corporate legal counsel. This is true with individuals who need help. How well are you asking questions to get to know them? Here's another question I'll hit you with. Let's see, how about here? Let's go to Kathleen. What's the difference? What's the difference between a friendship and a healthy business relationship?
I mean, with friendship, you know everything that's going on in their personal life, and a healthy business relationship, you know what's going on with their business, but not necessarily what they did this weekend.
Okay, that's part of it. So what's the goal of a friendship, Kathleen?
A mutual benefit.
Yeah, I would say the goal of a friendship is just the friendship itself.
Yeah.
Right, that's all we're looking for out of this is just the friendship, right? If it's a true, healthy friendship, all we're looking for is you know, the friendship. What is the definition, say, Andrew Connor, of a healthy business relationship? What's the goal of a healthy business relationship?
Well, to make money.
Okay, and so the goal of a healthy business relationship is for both sides, both people, or all people involved, knowingly helping each other reach their business goals, right? It's for both sides. It's mutually beneficial, right? So if you have a client, their goal is to, you know, whatever their goal is, right? And your goal is to help them and to make money. So it's both of you knowing that you're helping each other reach mutual business goals. Why would I tell you, well, why do you think it's disingenuous? Why do you think it's disingenuous, Elizabeth Crane, to go into a situation, a business relationship, where the first thing you want to do is go make best friends with them? Why do you think, knowing that what your end goal is to do business with them, why do you think that's a problem?
Well, I think you don't really make friendships by wanting something from somebody.
Right. 100%, right? Yet a lot of times from age, whatever, 0 to 21, 22, 25, the way we've been successful with relationships is with friendships. And that's how we know that we're doing okay, right? Is we can go make friends with people, and that's our thing. What I'll tell you is that can come across as, well, first of all, your prospects, let me back up. How many of you have plenty of friends already? Raise your hand. How many of you need more friends? Raise your hand. Gosh, I could use a whole lot more friends. If you need more friends, go get a dog, right? Don't go to work to make more friends. And don't take me too literally here, because we want to be kind to people, right? That's what we want to be, is kind and understanding. But the reality is, I want you to go to work, and it's your law practice. Some of your clients may end up being really close friends of yours over time. That may happen. There's the pupster. Hey! you may end up being friends with your clients, but I want the goal not necessarily to be friends. The goal is to help each other. If you end up being friends, does anybody have any clients right now that they say, hell, I don't want to have dinner with them. I don't want to know their family. Or is it just me, right? Maybe I enjoy working with them. Maybe I respect them very much. Maybe I don't. But there are plenty of people that you don't want to be friends with, right? And they don't want to be friends necessarily with you. They want to trust you enough to give you money to make a problem go away. So we'll talk about how to do that in a minute. I brainstormed, just want to ask for y'all's help. I brainstormed a list of 6 or 7, depends on how you count them, and there are probably more than that, ways that you can go get business. 6 or 7 ways you can go get business as an attorney. I know the first thing y'all tell me is, well, we can't do cold calls. I totally get it. What are some ways that you can get business? Somebody hit me with one.
Living life. Just, and what I do as a personal injury lawyer, going to the grocery store, talking to people at the bank, just being friendly wherever you are.
Got it. All right. So, so I love that. So just walking around your world, right? So walking around your world is a good one. What's another way?
Referrals and a good reputation.
So referrals from, let's split that up. I got about 6 subgroups in there. What's one place you can get referrals?
Other lawyers.
Right. Okay. And I split that into 2 subgroups too. What kind of other lawyers?
Opposing counsel and people that also do what you do.
Sure. Right. So I would say, and it depends upon your situation, but there are probably groups of lawyers or another lawyer in your firm who can be a good referral source, right? That they don't do what you do. And there are also people that are in other firms that maybe they're conflicted out, right? Or this is something that's not in their main bailiwick, right? So you got people in your firm, and then you've got people at other firms who may be conflicted out. What's another way? What's another way to get referred? Molly?
I know this is probably contradictory to what you just said, but friends.
Friends is fine. I mean, friends can refer you business. It's okay. I mean, that's not a problem, but I just don't want you to go feel like you have to go make friends with every single person you want to do business with. So your friends can refer you business. What's another way we can get referrals?
Clients.
Huh?
Current clients or former clients.
Current, former clients. Absolutely. What's another way?
Hey, Walker, M. Wright responded to everyone in the chat and said, this isn't mine, I'm just telling you what it says in the chat, but social organizations like Rotary, things like that.
Perfect. Okay, yeah, right? So that's touches on one of my things. I like that. But I would say getting referrals from non-lawyers, and I would call that strategic alliances. So there are people out there in the world that are maybe they're accountants, maybe they're commercial real estate guys, doesn't matter what they are, maybe they're insurance people, maybe they're just influencers in the community, right, that are out there and they know people. There's a book by Malcolm Gladwell. It's older. It's called The Tipping Point. Anybody read The Tipping Point before? Great book. I highly recommend it. It's one of Gladwell's first ones he published, and he talks about different types of people. And one type of person he talked about was a connector. And a connector is somebody that kind of sees the world as they put people together. They like to introduce one person to another. So, another way to frame that is almost like a giver, right? There's somebody that looks to put people together, to give things to other people. How do I make this happen? How do I make that happen? And so when two givers get together, when two connectors get together, they can make each other a hell of a lot of money. And if you can find somebody else who's, and I'll talk about how to do this in a few minutes, but when you can find somebody else who likes to refer people, who's into that, who can really help you, and then you can refer business back to them, y'all can make each other a hell of a lot of money over time. Let's see. Provide strategic alliances, lawyers outside your firm. So here's what I said. Number one, you can inherit a client, right? It can be an older lawyer in your firm who's retired or somebody in a firm group who's left, and you can inherit them. That's one way, right? That's the old-fashioned way. Number two, you can go directly to the client. You can go out and actually have a, you know, through, you know, one form or another of getting introduced or even through a prospecting thing, you can go right to the client. That's the part that makes people the most nervous a lot of times. Get referral from lawyers in your firm, refer by lawyers outside of your firm, non-lawyers. You can also be a subject matter expert and speak at conferences and webinars. Once again, we're talking about getting referred, right? Or maybe you're speaking to a bunch of users, the people that could use your service, and they can come to you for that. So all kinds of channels. What I would tell you is you probably ought to at least be working on at least three, if not four channels at any given time to go find business.
Walker, not to, excuse me for interrupting. We just circulated the handout to everyone via email if you want to refer to them.
Great. So probably three or four of those things at any given time you need to be working on. If you're relying on one channel for business and that one channel dries up, you're toast. So let's talk about this for a minute then. So now, maybe you recognize how I can go get business. Here are four or five or six or seven ways I can go do this. I need to pick three or four at least and work those channels. If you think about being a connector, what are some ways that if you were to call somebody, if you were to go visit with other lawyers in your office, for example, right? Other associates, other partners in your office. What are some things that you could go talk to them about? What are some things you, let me just lead it. What are some things you go ask them about that might help them help you? Jacob, what's one thing?
You caught me zoned out. Ask it again.
What are some things that if you're going to have a conversation with another lawyer, I don't care if it's inside your firm or outside your firm, and you're interested in having them refer you business, what are some things that you can ask in that conversation to help you help them?
You can ask them what type of work they normally do if you don't already know.
And you know what? Why is it important, even if you know, to ask anyway?
Well, because then they're going to ask you and you can find out that you do different type work. And then if they like you or think you're competent, they'll refer you to the business.
Correct. Right. What I would tell you is if you want to go meet with somebody, I would go ask, because the first part is you got to be willing to be open to give. Right. Hey. And so here's what the phone conversation could sound like. Hey, John, I realize I've known you since law school and I kind of know what you do, but I don't know exactly who an ideal client is for you. So in case I come across one, I could send it to you. Do you mind if we go have a beer, have a conversation so I can find out more about you and what you do? Now here's the catch. I want you to be sincere. This can't just be some move, right? I want you to go out there and find out what are other, because people, and we'll talk about ideal clients in just a second, but people have, each of them has one that's right in their sweet spot, an idea of who they're looking for. And maybe you already know, but there's real value in somebody, in that person across from you, explaining it to you again. There's huge value in trust building when they tell you, when it comes out of their mouth, they're explaining to you and you're listening. Because then they get to see he understands, she's trying to help. Here's where you'll get frustrated with the human race. 60% of people that you go have that conversation with may ask you one question about who you work with or who you're looking for. Well, 60% will. 40% won't ask you more than one question. 60% of people will engage you in that conversation. 40% will not. They won't ask you about you and your ideal clients and how they can help you. Just know that's going to be the case. So what do you do when you find somebody that doesn't really ask you much about your practice, what you're looking for? Let's see, James, Lee Floyd. What do you do when you go have a beer with somebody, you have lunch or you have a fun conversation with them and you figure out they don't ask you any questions about you and your practice or many questions? They just kind of ask and they breeze on.
As long as I've found out what they actually need in their world, I would still try to at least help them out with the hope of making it more legitimate and seem legitimate of an offer. If they're really an ass about it, to be honest, I would probably just consider it kind of dead and them not a connect.
That's what I want you to think about. This is a business, right? We're not out there necessarily to make friends. It's good if we do. We want to have alliances. We want to have people that know what we do. When I was in the commercial real estate business for about 10 years, and I worked with, somebody taught me about this building networks, right? And so I would go, I met with people probably 2 or 3 times a week because I didn't have as much to do as I needed, right? And so I would go meet with lawyers and accountants and business owners. And what I went to go find out was, who are you and what do you do and who's your ideal prospect and how can I help? And what I found was there were some that would ask me about what I did. So I found I probably had coffee or lunch or conversations with about 30 lawyers. And what I found was there were 2, 3 actually, that I had conversations with that practiced commercial real estate law that they said, hey, tell me who you're looking for. And at some point over a year or 2 year period, they tried to refer me business. And it was those 2 guys that I ended up referring most of the time, right? Because they were ones that were interested in what I was doing and weren't just saying, okay, great, thanks. Okay, great, thanks. Okay, great, thanks. They would spend some time. Who am I looking for? What, Walker, what are you trying to do? Who's somebody that I could send you, right? So if you can connect with somebody else that's sincerely curious about you and what you're trying to do, those are the ones to spend time with. Those are the ones to build a healthy business relationship with, right? So let's talk for a minute about, so that's kind of where you might go. Let's talk for a minute about what you're looking for. I'm gonna tell you a story, kind of a cheesy story. Maybe some of you have heard this before. And then I'm going to ask you some questions. I want you to help frame who an ideal prospect for you might be. A prospect is somebody that's not yet hired you. A client, somebody that's already paying you, right, or has paid you. So a man lives way out in the woods and he's got to feed his family. And he says there are a whole lot of squirrels in the woods. So he wakes up in the morning and he walks all day and he shoots 5 or 6 squirrels and he comes back and skins them, cleans them, cooks them, feeds his family one meal. Goes out the next day, walks all day, shoots 5 or 6 squirrels, comes back, skins them, cleans them, cooks them, feeds his family one meal. Day 3, 4, 5 go by, same thing happens. He says, man, this is ridiculous. This is bullshit. Family's still hungry. My feet hurt, having to go further and further and further. This is no fun. Never getting ahead. I'm going to go kill an elephant because I can kill one of those and feed the family for a couple of years. So he gets up the next morning, gets all the stuff necessary to kill an elephant. He walks out the door, he's gone. And a couple days go by and his son says, man, I'm hungry. There are no elephants nearby. They're hard to kill. He's as likely to get killed by one as kill one himself. I don't know how I'll drag it back. I don't even know how to cook elephant meat. So he says, you know, there are a lot of deer in the woods too. So he goes out that afternoon, grabs his rifle, goes out that afternoon, climbs a tree, gets lucky the first day, shoots a deer, drags it back, skins it, cleans it, able to feed the family for 2 weeks, goes out 10 days later, shoots another deer. Now, y'all know where this story's going, right? You've already figured it out. Think about your prospects and your clients as squirrels, deer, and elephants. Squirrels are the tiny ones. They're probably calling you. highly service intensive. Maybe you can charge them a lot of money, but it's not a lot of money. It's not many hours, or it's not big fees. People that have a book full of squirrels are always afraid they're going to run out of time. On the other end of the spectrum are the elephants, right? They're the giant ones. Maybe they're corporate. Maybe they're big corporate. Who knows? Everybody's world's going to be different. And the elephants, you take a long time to close. You finally get one as your client. And then as soon as you get started, they'll ask, it's called scope creep. They'll ask you to do a little bit more work and they don't want to pay you any more money for it. The next step in their process is you move on down the line, you work with them and you bust your ass and you build up your organization so you can service them and take care of them. Some point down the road, 6 months, 6 years, they come back to you and say, hey man, really love working with you. Love the relationship. Really is great. We're getting a lot of pressure from our board. Things are tight right now. Can you help us? You're charging us $300 an hour. There's some other firms that say they can do this for $200 an hour. Can you help? I'd rather work with you than somebody else. And guess what most people do, most attorneys will do, or most business people do when they're given that choice? Gosh, if I lose this, it's going to be a huge part of my revenue. And so then they cut their fees. Or maybe they pass the stuff down to an associate. So by definition, their service, the quality of care is going to go down. And the next phone call you get from the elephant or whatever it is, 6 months, 2 years later is, hey, we're not getting the kind of attention we need. You're fired. Deer are the ones in the middle. They're right in your sweet spot. In your marketplace, there are hundreds of them, if not more. In your business, if you had somewhere between, I don't know if this is relevant or not, somewhere between, call it 20 and 50 deer, you'd have a damn nice practice. Plenty of work, room for associates, room to grow. What does a deer look like for you? Now, here's the thing. There's nothing wrong with any of these clients. Squirrels are tiny ones. Maybe it's consistent work. I'm not suggesting you fire them. Elephants, what I want you to recognize with an elephant is just recognize of what they are. If you have any one client that's more than, call it 20% of your revenue, you're in trouble. When I say in trouble, you are indebted to them. They own you. You don't own them. So what I want you to do in your prospecting is to focus on deer. How do I get in front of more deer? How do I get referred to more deer? How do I make what a deer looks like for me so clear and so simple that other people can understand who that is and they can refer it to me? So I'm just, does this story resonate with people at all? Sort of. All right. So Andrew, who's a deer for you? Andrew Connor, who's a deer for you? And don't give me the name, but describe a deer for you.
Deer for me would be kind of probably an insurance company who deals with E&O insurance or something. So some sort of coverage, which they're willing to pay higher rates than normal.
Okay.
For very severe kind of business fraud kind of work.
How many of those are out there in your marketplace?
Depends on how many bad actors there are, but there's probably, I don't know, 5 to 10 good ones.
In the country?
Probably, mm-hmm.
Okay, so is there a, because by definition, I realize that would be a damn good client, is there a level below that where there might be more of them out there so you don't feel so beholden?
Possibly. In a tough spot, because if you go too far down the insurance ladder, the rates just don't cut it.
I totally get it. So, all right. So, and what would you bill somebody in a year or over 2 years that would make them a good deer client for you?
If I billed them about probably 50 to 100.
Okay.
That'd be a pretty good client.
50 to 100K. And what I hope is that 5 years from now, your definition of dear is bigger than it is now, right? But I want you to think about, how can I focus my marketing, my business development, my efforts on developing, you know, clients in that range? Jacob, who is an ideal prospect, a dear for you? Describe it for me.
I was just thinking, your analogy probably isn't quite as good for somebody that has a small town plaintiff's practice that also does criminal defense and domestic work.
Okay.
So your criminal defense domestic work is higher revenue. Like, you have more of those cases, they move faster. But then you can have a plaintiff's civil litigation case that's a simple car wreck or a really complicated death car wreck. So it's kind of, I mean, you just take it, it just doesn't quite translate well to
all right. So how about this? Could a referral source be a deer for you?
Potentially, sure.
So what kind of referral source would be a deer for you?
I guess somebody who has another professional business, either another lawyer in town or financial advisor, accountant, something like that.
Okay. So maybe what you look at is, so the deer for me or somebody that can refer me, I don't know what the number is, 2, 3, 5 cases a year. All right. How about you, Elizabeth? Who's a deer? Elizabeth Crane, who's a deer for you in your world?
Well, I'm in a little bit of a different situation. I actually am not in private practice. I'm at the law
school. You work for the state, right? Yes.
Yeah. So I work for the law school. I'm in career counseling. So I came from the judicial department. I was a law clerk. And so I'm kind of trying to learn more about business development in the private side. So.
Okay. Got it. Demetrius, who's a deer for you?
I think smaller to mid-sized, you know, manufacturing plants. I do a little bit on aviation side. I came from aviation in the military, so that's just comes naturally to me. So I wouldn't even say something large, like you said, the elephants. I'm not looking at anything large. I'm looking at, you know, smaller, just cogs in the wheel, if you will.
So tell me the kind of problem somebody might be having if they needed your help.
There's a lot of airworthiness. There's a lot of red tape when it comes to when you manufacture aviation materials, or, you know, just any materials in general. There's a lot of red tape. There's a lot of oversight by administrative agencies.
Yeah.
And then you still deal with just general business stuff as well. Like, you still deal with employees. You might have five employees, still have HR issues, still have business. Of contractual issues, transactional issues, along with litigation. So,
okay, it's all a right. Good. So, here's what when you're talking with lawyers. So, here's one of my pet peeves about industry in general. And I think it happens in y'all's business too. Let me see, Shay. What kind of practice do you have? You had to unmute yourself there.
I always forget to do that. I do nursing home defense and insurance defense.
Okay. So you know exactly what that means. Probably everybody else on this call knows exactly what that means. But how would you make that simple so that you could explain it to a 14-year-old and they could explain it to their parents who would understand what you do?
So with nursing home defense, I probably could say, you know, when your grandmother is, or you can't, if your mom or your dad can't take care of your grandmother anymore, they go to this place and nurses care for them. So I represent, or I help the nurses who take care of your grandmother.
Help them do what?
I don't know. I don't know how it would...
How would you, and I guess you can take the 16-year-old out, or 14, 16-year-old, but how would you, what is the exactly, here's the thing, and I know attorneys who say this, and probably none of y'all are, they go, I say, what kind of law do you practice? Oh, we do civil defense. I have no idea what that means. It sounds like you might as well be in the freaking military if you do civil defense, right? So it's hard for me to refer somebody if I don't know what the hell it is they do, right? What I'm going to need to hear is, who are the types of people that you're looking to work with? And so if you're doing, let's just call it nursing home defense, right? You help nursing homes when maybe patients or patients' families sue them. Is that correct?
Right.
Okay. So you might even tell a story. You know how nursing homes have all these old people in them? And sometimes families don't think they're being well taken care of, and so they turn around and sue the nursing home.
Yeah.
I'm the person that represents big nursing home to keep them out of trouble, right? If you can say it simply, and what I promise is, you may say, that sounds stupid and everybody knows what this is. I promise the more simply you can describe what it is that you do and who your ideal client is, the better off you'll be, because not everybody, even the lawyers that are on this call, may not know exactly who your ideal client is, right? And so, because some people may be better, I don't know, Shay, if it makes a difference. Some people may say, I represent the big national firms. I represent people like NHC and blah, 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 the other big firms. Others will say, look, I specialize in the small privately owned ones. And I'm sure you can do both. I'm sure that's not a big deal. But so, Stephen, who is your ideal prospect? Who's a deer for you?
Kind of hard to say, because I'm just now starting off, kind of trying to start a general practice.
Good.
Solo. So I kind of am right now open to taking a little bit of everything. So okay. I've never really, honestly, probably one of the first times I really try to think about it in that type of context. So
how, what were you practicing before with a different firm, or were you by yourself the whole time?
Purchased by myself the entire time. So.
Okay. And how long you been practicing?
Just like 8 months.
Okay, got it. So so you're out just trying. So how would you tell somebody? Because if you say, I'm just a general lawyer looking for anything, guess what, right? That's going to be harder to refer you. Is there a way you can narrow? Can you tell a story about the right person you'd like to help?
I always just joke, you know, I dabble a little bit of everything except for taxes, just because I do not understand numbers. Okay. So
maybe you say, I work with people that sometimes they recognize they need a lawyer. They've either been in a car accident, or they feel like somebody's done something bad or broken a contract, and they need somebody to give an opinion and help them out of a problem.
Yes, that would be a very succinct way of saying it.
Okay, so just the more kind of you can talk about the things that people would be dealing with and why they'd need to call you. Molly, who's an ideal prospect? Who's a dear prospect for you? Are you the one that works at the state?
No, I don't.
Okay.
So Lanice, who's below me on the screen, we work together. So we represent primarily school districts. Okay. So a mid-sized school district would be, sorry, I have like a piece of hair somewhere on my face.
Cool. Me too.
Happy Wednesday. So like a mid-sized school district would be, I think, an ideal deer client for us. Some of the larger districts, that would be more of an elephant, because they would take up a lot more of our time. But we do also do some state agency defense. So one of our clients is a large state agency. So I'd say they're more of an elephant.
Sure.
But so
how would
we're
you, how would I know
more specialized.
How would I know what a mid-sized school district look like? How would Walker McKay, guy on the street, that's a mid-sized, you work in a mid-sized school district, you need to talk to Molly.
You'd have to know the demographics, really, and the area. You'd have to be familiar with where they're located, whether there's one district in the entire county, or if there's multiple districts in a county.
So does that mean like 3 to 5 schools is a mid-size, or is it 10 schools in a school district?
10-ish would be more mid-size, okay. Yeah.
All right, perfect. How about you, Alex, ideal prospect for you, dear?
Probably small to mid-sized business. They have momentum. They have a defined product. They know that they have problems and breakages. They're looking to scale, grow, and they need in-house support, but they really can't afford hiring somebody full-time. So basically,
what do problems and breakages mean? I heard you say that. I think I know what that means. What does that mean?
Sure. So they've outgrown their their initial structures. Basically, they've cobbled a business together. They're really good at what they do, but they just do not know what proper infrastructure is necessary to grow a proper business and scale it.
Okay. So make just one more minute, one more time, make that more simple.
I help small and mid-sized businesses become more efficient and reduce risk.
Okay. And, you know, by sometimes their operating agreements, that the agreements of how they work together aren't good enough. Sometimes the contracts that they've been working on aren't as sophisticated as they need to be, or they're not updated and things like that, correct?
Correct.
So just the more we can make it so that somebody else can say, you know what, I've heard John, my friend, the business owner, you need to talk to him. My client, John, needs your help, right? So the more we can make it simple, simple, dumb, dumb, because you know what you're, that's the problem with being smart, like a lawyer is, you think everybody else is smart too, and you think everybody else understands what you're talking about. And they don't. We got to make it simple, simple, dumb, dumb. So, all right, let me move on to the next thing, if we can here. What do you do when you get in front of somebody, right? How do you have this conversation? Couple of rules about it. Number one, I want you to have business conversations. It's okay to have friend conversations. It's okay to say, hey, how you doing? How's your family? It's okay to do that. But what I want you to be able to do is transition. And here's some words to transition. Is this an okay? Are you okay having a business conversation with me? Or are you okay talking business with me now? Because a lot of times this happens a lot in small towns, right? Where we pick up, or I say small towns, like small states like South Carolina, where we say, hey, let's go have lunch. And you go have lunch with somebody and maybe they've invited you to have lunch, and about halfway through or maybe not that long, you realize you're a prospect and they're trying to sell you something. I don't like that. That's pressure. What I would tell you is if you want to go have a business conversation with somebody to say, you mind if you would want to go have a beer, go have lunch, have a phone call? I'd love to have a business conversation with you. Let people know that's your intention. There's nothing wrong with that. We're all in business to make money. But just know where the separation is. Are you okay if we have a business conversation? And in order to get clients, I want you to be able to, you got to be able to have business conversations with them first. A business conversation is just talking about, asking about their business. How do you do this? How do you do that? How do you guys handle this? It's not being afraid. Who's your ideal client? Who's your ideal customer? Who are you going after? Even if that's not relevant to what you do, you're having them begin to talk about themselves, their business, so you can understand them. All right? Business conversations. And that's one of the things that can make you more valuable to your client is if you've had business conversations with them. So you begin to understand where they're coming from and what their life and their business is like. I want you to be really good at, and again, I think they teach you this in law school, the best kind of business development is asking questions and not telling. It's finding out exactly what's going on with them and what their opinions are about things. That's a part I really work with my clients a lot. It's one thing to get data, and data's fine. Everybody will gather data, but it's even more important for you to get people's opinions. What do you think about this? How is that working? What would happen if this were fixed? What's the worst case scenario for you, do you think? Ask them, what happens if this happens? Instead of telling them, I want you to ask first, because that's how you're going to have more bonding with them. It's how you build trust, because people care about their opinions first before they care about yours. Quite frankly, you shouldn't give people advice until after they've hired you. Don't give people advice until after they've hired you. Honestly, until somebody's paying you, they put the same level of trust in their own advice, their own beliefs, as they do yours until they pay you. I've given you a couple of, I gave you a sheet. The second sheet you would have gotten are some questioning strategies to use. So one of them, and we've only got a few minutes, so I'm going to ask you for some lessons learned, if you can hang on for a minute. one of the questioning strategies, if they're using another lawyer or another law firm, right? The Sheila, will you do a role play with me? Sheila Willis? Okay, yeah, unmute yourself there for a second.
Yeah, sure.
All right, so this questioning strategy is called good, bad, and most people want to skip the first part. But this is how, if somebody's working with another lawyer, another law firm, you can see if you've got a shot, right? So Sheila, just play the role play. I'll be, you're a corporate, you own a business, something like that. How about that? Is that okay with you?
Yeah.
All right, so, and I'm just having a business conversation. Hey, Sheila, who do you guys work with? Who do you use for legal counsel?
We use Good, Better, Best LLC.
Wow, good for you. How long have you been working with them?
Probably about 4 or 5 years.
You know what? They're smart. Those are good, smart folks. How'd you find them?
From a friend, actually.
That's cool. What do you like best with what they do? I'm always curious about my competition, and they're great competition. What do you like best with what they do for you?
They are pretty responsive. When I call them, they answer my questions, and they've been just pretty reliable.
I mean, they're known for being responsive. They're great. They got plenty of information there, and they're known as being reliable. I'm agreeing with everything she said she liked. Here's what I know, though, Sheila. I mean, we're not perfect. I'm certainly not perfect. I can't imagine those guys are perfect. If there were one thing you wish they did better or differently, what would that be?
I wish they would give us more time to review things. I feel like I'm always getting things last minute, and then they kind of want us to review it like in a day, and that's just not how things work sometimes.
That's no big deal. What else?
Sometimes their work has typos, and it's just like little things, but you know, if I'm paying this much money, you should give me something that's completely, you know, flawless.
I guess so, but that's no big deal either. What else?
It seems like they have, as they've grown, they've really kind of pushed our file to, you know, some people we don't really know.
All right, let's stop for a second. So let me go back over what I just did. Okay. I'm going to ask them what they like about their current law relationship. Demetrius, why would I do that?
Just to see, you know, how they're doing as a competitor, the benefits that they provide, how comparable it is to what you would provide if you were in that same relationship.
Correct, right? That, because there are two things. One, they've chosen those folks for a reason. So if I insult them or I say, that's a shitty firm, they made the choice and they'll defend even their shitty choices. They'll defend their bad decisions. So what I want you to think about is ask them what they like. You need to know that about in the marketplace anyway, and you're seeing what it is that they value. They also may say, I don't know what I like about them. But chances are they'll give you something. And whatever they say they like, I want you to agree with. And then you transition and you say, here's what I know. We're not perfect. I can't imagine that firm is perfect. If there were one thing you wish were better or different, what would that be? Right? The reason I ask for one thing, right? If you ask a specific question, you get a specific answer. You ask a general question, you get a general answer. Is there anything they could do better? I don't know. If there were one thing they could do better, what would that be? Chances are they're gonna give you something. And I'm gonna say, hey, Andrew, why did I tell her that whatever she said first was no big deal? Why do you think I did that?
Probably just to dig deeper, see what else you could find out.
Yeah, because if I say, oh, that's a big deal, blah, 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 then I don't get any more of her list. I'm never the one that's saying anything bad about my competition. I've agreed with all the good stuff. I've disagreed with the stuff she said was bad. Here's the other thing. When I disagree and I say, I'm not disagreeing, but I say, that's no big deal. That's no big deal. Sometimes they'll say to you, are you kidding me? Typos in their legal documents? That's a huge deal. And I'll say, okay, tell me more about that. Whose idea is that it's a problem? It's theirs. Now, if I say they've got typos in their legal agreement, that's terrible. I've just shut down the conversation. So when you begin to find problems, that's when you can dig in and say, tell me more about that. Give me an example. How long has that been going on? What have you tried to do about it? Sincerely curious. And here's the thing. When you're doing that, nobody feels like you're selling. You're sincerely curious. And that's what I want you to think about is in all of your selling and all of your relations with other people, be sincerely curious. What do they mean by that? When somebody says, you know, they give us kind of bad service. They feel like our file's been pushed back. Don't be afraid to say, what does that mean? Because people want to explain that and they want to feel understood. Even if you know, even if you think you know what that means, people want to be understood. One other thing I'll throw at you in this, just before we go, is a questioning strategy called Let's Pretend. Let's pretend you were to switch law firms. Let's pretend you were to switch firms or come work with us, hire us. And it's a year from now and you're saying, wow, working with you guys has made a world of difference. It's one of the best business decisions I've ever made. What would have to happen in the next 12 months for you to be able to say that? And by asking that question, I can learn their opinions about what they want to have happen, about what they like, what they don't like, what they'd expect. And you can see, do their ideas match with mine? Can I deliver what it is they're looking for? Maybe you could say, let's pretend it's a year from now, and you're saying, boy, it's one of the best business decisions I've ever made, and you're paying us more than you're paying the last person. What would have to happen for you to be able to say that? Their opinions. It doesn't matter what you think is great. It matters what they think is great. All of your reasons for them to do business with you, the ones that you can come up with, they don't give a shit. It's their reasons. People make emotional decisions and then they justify it intellectually. I'm looking at a new truck right now. I'm going to buy a new truck. I found one just like I want, but it's bright red. I'm not going to buy it. Is that emotional? Shit, yeah, it's emotional. There's nothing intellectual about it. The pigment of the paint color. We make all of our decisions emotionally. We're either moving towards pleasure or away from pain. And then we justify it intellectually. Oh, well, I bought this truck because, you know, I'm a hunter and I like being out in the woods. It's true. But I could buy a Subaru too, but there's no way in hell I'm doing that. I'm gonna end up justifying spending $50,000 on a damn truck because I go to the hunt club a couple times a month and I really could buy a used Subaru to do the same thing or worse, right? All right, so let's get some lessons around the room. I'm curious what people have picked up, what they've learned. I'm gonna start with you, Alex Junkie, and then Lee Floyd, and then Molly Flynn.
Just lessons from today?
Yeah, anything?
Fostering conversations, looking for leads in all the unexpected places, make connections, find affiliate groups. One thing I was gonna offer that I found to be very successful for asking those open-ended questions is asking prospective clients, the bigger ones especially, what is your definition of success?
Great. Yeah, what does it look like? Perfect, good. Lee, how about you?
So I haven't thought about my practice as much in the rabbit, squirrels, deer, and elephant terms. And I was thinking about that a little more and making it a little more clearly defined.
Perfect. Good. How about you, Molly?
I would say I think really delineating the line between friendship and business relationship, because I think those get blurred a lot. That was really helpful.
It's easy to have happen. How about you, Cameo, and then Demetrius, and then Elizabeth Crane?
I think I learned that emotions are more relevant in this realm than I thought.
100% they are, right? People pick their law firm based on emotional reasons. They just do. I don't give a shit what they say. That's what happens. And the thing is, we need to realize what is it that caused them to hire us to make sure we give them more of that. Demetrius, how about you? All the colors, everything just switched. Demetrius, how about you?
I think I like you putting a number on the, any client worth more than 20% of your practice is kind of hurting you.
They're owning you, and I'm not suggesting you fire them, but just know you need to dilute them.
Right, and there was not a number that I had in mind. I knew there was at a certain point, too much from one would be too much, but just hearing that was good to hear.
Good. How about you, Amanda Pittman? Unmute yourself.
Sorry. I think that the deer, rabbit, and elephant scenario, I know someone already said that, was really helpful. We've actually incorporated that by using like A, B, C rated cases, so we can see where we need to use our resources at the firm.
Right on.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, right on. I think that's great.
And I do ask clients a lot of questions. I start out at depo prep by saying, you know, what do you know about depositions? What can I answer for you? But I think it's also important, like, for instance, in an intake, especially as a personal injury lawyer, or I can rephrase, like you said, dumbing it down a little bit, car accidents, dog attacks, things like that. But anyway, to ask, you know, what does success look like for you? Because I do think it would help manage client expectations and also to make sure that I'm doing what makes them happy.
100%. Jacob, and then Elizabeth Crane.
Yeah, always a good reminder. Ask questions. Keep your answers simple.
Yes, right on. Elizabeth Crane.
I like the focus on asking questions rather than telling, and being intentional about having conversations with other attorneys.
Bingo, right on. I don't know your name in the black sweater with the white earphones on. Your name's on the screen. What'd you learn today?
I like that you focused on the three channels of clients, to have three to four channels and not just focus on one client.
Good. Perfect. Stephen Chenoweth, and then Andrew, and then Sheila.
I like the idea of just always making sure that you're sincere when having these conversations with people, because I think that goes a long way. And then also,
yes,
understand the pros and cons of, you know, the squirrel, deer, or the different levels of clients. Mm-hmm.
Good. Andrew.
I liked being able to identify your ideal client instead of trying to distill what you do for a whole bunch of different clients into a little elevator speech for people.
Good. Excellent. Sheila, how about you?
I really liked the very specific ways of going about a business conversation. I think I struggle with, because I get awkward in those situations of like, you know that I want business. I know that you want business. Why do we have to go through the charade? Like, I don't know the things to say, but I thought it was really good. The strategies, like, I literally wrote them down.
Several of you guys wrote down, I won't say your names out loud, but you wrote that you were considered, you want to get better at business development so that you could start your own firm, which I think is awesome, right? I'm all about the entrepreneurship. I've left about five different companies. I've figured out I'm not hireable by anybody else. I have to work for myself. And one of the things I caution my clients when they switch jobs or start their own, the sooner you stop saying, I'm so excited about this new opportunity for me. As soon as you can stop talking about how excited you are, the sooner you'll start getting clients and get to work. When you say, I'm so excited, subliminally, what you're trying to do is psych yourself up to so you believe that, and people can sense it. The more that you can just say, we started a firm, we're working with clients like this, and it's a matter of business, right? That you're having this conversation, not I'm so excited because that's all about you. The more you can make it professional, move forward towards about how you can help somebody else, that's when you'll start being successful. Guys, thank you all very much. If anybody's got any questions, you can reach me at walker@walkermckay.com. There's some ways you can link with me on the social channels on one of those sheets. And I'd be happy to answer any questions you have or have conversations with any of you. So thank you guys very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate you.
Thank you.
Bye, guys.
Thank you so much.
Bye, guys. Thanks.
Bye.
Hope to see you soon. Thank you, Sheila.
You're welcome. Thank you, Walker.